say a huge thank you to Pastor Andy for his leadership during this time, the encouragement. When Andy and Lisa came for their interview, I prayed that, you know, if this is the right appointment, Lord, would you give me a sign? And lo and behold, at lunchtime, I got that sign. I don't know if you remember this. I ordered a lime soda, and Andy and Lisa also ordered a lime soda. So at that point, I thought, no further questions, Your Honour. But I'm glad that we did speak for the rest of the day and hear your heart, Andy. And we've seen, in already this short space of time, that comes to play. So thank you for that. And also, I couldn't stand up here this morning and not mention Dave Aylin, who was my pastor and friend for 12 years. And you know, it's not in every church in the country that a man like Dave would see beyond age and gender and race and bring someone like me onto his team and give me the opportunity to learn from the elders and the rest of the team. And I don't take that for granted. And that has done wonders for my journey and my walk with God. So I have to acknowledge that. I'm incredibly grateful for everything that I learned from him. So here we are. So when Pastor Andy offered the terrifying invitation of coming to preach this morning, he said, share whatever's on your heart. And even though it was terrifying, and I can't emphasize that enough, I knew immediately it was going to be Colossians 3, because this is a passage that has been speaking to me throughout lockdown, really. And there's so much in there, and I hope that there's some encouragement for all of us in it today. So if you've got your Bibles, let's turn together to Colossians chapter 3, and we're going to read the whole chapter. So it says, since then you have been raised with Christ, set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. For you died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature: sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. Because of these, the wrath of God is coming. You used to walk in these ways in the life you once lived, but now you must rid yourselves of all such things as these: anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language from your lips. Do not lie to each other, since you have taken off your old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of its creator. Here there is no Greek or Jew, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave or free, but Christ is all and is in all. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with one another and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body you were called to peace. And be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom, and as you sing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs with gratitude in your hearts to God. And whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God to the Father through him. Wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Fathers, do not embitter your children, or they will become discouraged. Slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything, and do it not only when their eye is on you and to win their favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men, since you know that you'll receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you're serving. Anyone who does wrong will be repaid for his wrong, and there is no favoritism. And the bit I wanted to focus on is verses 17 and 23. Whatever you do, do it all in the name of the Lord, giving thanks to God the Father through Jesus. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you'll receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. And while I was thinking about this, whatever you do, I realised that actually, and the reason I wanted to read the whole passage is because it's not just about the whatever we do. And I think in this chapter, Paul takes us on a journey. And I think it starts with who we are. an understanding of who we are, which then leads on to what we choose, which ultimately brings us to whatever we do. So I hope we can unpack that a little bit this morning. So Paul starts off right at the beginning, telling us some really good news. He says that we are raised with Christ. And in Romans 6, verse 4, Paul talks about walking in the newness of life, having been raised with Christ. So this sense of being raised is that we are new creations. And he talks about the new self, which is being continually renewed. He says that we are hidden with Christ, meaning that we are contained, that we are secure because of what Jesus has done for us on the cross. And then he says, when Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. And I got really stuck at this Christ is your life bit, because we say all sorts of things are our life, don't we? We say, oh, their job is their life, their kids are their life, football is their life. But we sing a lot of songs which suggest that Christ is our life, don't we? Christ is enough, Christ my all in all, Jesus at the centre of it all. It really is all about him. And I just had to take a moment and think, do I always live as though Christ is my life? If all else fails and fades away, it is, it's all about him. And then we have the promise that he is coming back for us and we will appear with him. And it's into that context that Paul tells us to put to death the old self, which we'll come to talk on in a minute. And so it struck me right at the beginning that it's important for us to spend some time knowing and understanding who and what we are, because everything that we do flows from that understanding. It's all about our identity. And we've all at some point been a child in a family, I would hope. And I was born into the Takeomi family. Shout out to my dad. He might be known to you as Solomon or Granddad. But in our family, I was the first child. I was the first daughter of that family. And I did not have a list of roles and responsibilities and a rule book, because being a daughter is just that, isn't it? It's an identity, it's not a role. Naturally, there are roles, there are duties, there are things that come from that. Every family has its culture and set of expectations, but the starting point is your identity as a child of that family. And for me, being immersed in that family, and I'm so grateful for parents that knew and loved Jesus, that came with a sense of security and a sense of belonging. And because I was so secure in that identity, when I got to 18, I was able to travel 170 miles away, go off to uni, and still not feel like I'd lost who I was. You know, if ever I was in a quandary, or if I needed more money, or if I had some good news at uni, I always knew. I knew where I belonged. I knew that I had a home back at home, because I was so secure, because I'd been immersed in that identity. And I think sometimes as Christians, we get ourselves tied in knots about, should I go out with this person? Should I live here? Should I take this job? Because we haven't spent enough time immersing ourselves in our identity as God's children. That has to be the starting point. So who are we? Paul tells us a little bit more in verse 12. He says, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved. One of the things that was part of our family culture was, if you didn't know what a word meant, you looked it up in the dictionary. My dad would not tell you the answer to anything. Sometimes my mum would, and so when I came to this, I thought, let me just look again at the dictionary, what these words mean, because we think we know them, but sometimes it gives us a new understanding. So chosen, one of the dictionary definitions of chosen was one who is the object of choice or divine favour, an elected person. I just thought that was so lovely, that we are God's object of choice. It was his desire that none of us should perish. That we are holy, that we are devoted entirely to the work of God, set apart, distinctive. Another definition said belonging to or coming from God, spiritually pure, untainted, because of what Jesus has done for us. And that we are dearly loved. Not just loved very much, but dearly, meaning with much loss or suffering at great cost. And I don't think there's a better way to describe the way that God has loved us so much that he sent his son. Yeah. Now, the thing is, I know that you might be thinking, that's all lovely, but walking around my daily life, I don't often feel chosen. I don't often feel holy, and I certainly don't often feel dearly loved. And I can appreciate that. But I think with this, this is the truth of who we are. And we have to take the Bible at its word, hold it up to ourselves as a spiritual mirror, and we have to walk in that truth, and sometimes the feelings will follow. I don't know if you've ever started a new job or a new role and you've been introduced as such, and people have been coming to you all day asking you questions as if you should know the answer. And sometimes you feel like a bit of a fraud, don't you? But as you step into that role, you become more like it if you feel more confident in that role. And I think it's also very much like when you take a child, or in our case, twins home for the first time. And I remember, you know, we had a bit of a rocky 2 weeks, but eventually they sent us home. And I thought, does anybody want to come and check that we're, no, okay, we're just going. And, you know, midwives and health visitors were coming to the house, talking to us as if we were the parents of these children, and we were kind of waiting for somebody else who knew what they were doing to come along. But, you know, after a few sleepless nights and feeds and all of the other stuff, we started to feel more like parents. And now 4 years down the line, we definitely feel more, and our lifestyle has changed. My lounge looks like a nursery, and I drive a Ford Galaxy. But it's my walk that's changed. The thing is, between 2017 and now, I'm no more their mum than I was at the beginning. It's my walk that's changed. I'm walking in the identity, and I think it's exactly the same with this. This is the truth. We take it as it is, we start to walk in that truth, we start to live as people who are chosen, holy, and dearly loved, and the feelings often follow. And so that leads us into what we choose. Now, psychologists tell us that we make about 35,000 choices a day. And I think most of those, we don't even think about. I was thinking, like, do you always put the same shoe on first? I'm going to leave that with you. There are two specific choices that Paul talks about in his passage. And the first is the putting to death of the old self. And he gives us that list of all sorts of things. Sexual immorality, impurity, lust, greed, idolatry, anger, rage, malice, slander, filthy language. And Paul, it says in the NIV, put to death. In the Amplified Bible, it actually says, put to death and deprive of power. And I really love that, because I think sometimes these are the things that we think have a hold over us. I've always been an angry person. I always liked a bit of gossip. This is just the way I am. And Paul's saying, no, now that you know the truth of who you are, you can choose to put those things to death, and they no longer have to have a hold over you. I think that's incredibly powerful. When I think about these words, it makes me think of like a really big, horrible, dusty wardrobe that's full of like rags, you know, the anger, the rage. This is what they look like. And you open the wardrobe and all of these moths fly out of it, and they're just filthy rags, but they're rags that we're used to wearing. I remember when Liz Hook read her poem about forgiveness a few weeks ago. She talked about wearing unforgiveness like an old robe, and that's exactly the kind of imagery that it conjures up for me. We put these things on because we've always worn them, and we know they're pretty rubbish, but there's something comforting about them. We think, this is just who I am. And so we have to make the choice not to wear that wardrobe, to put it to death, to do whatever we have to do to get rid of that from our lives. And here we have the alternative. Clothe yourselves with kindness, compassion, humility, and patience. This is our solid oak, brand spanking new wardrobe with beautiful clothes in lots of different colours. And it's up to us to choose what we are going to clothe ourselves in now that we know who we are. During lockdown, I started running because what else could we do? And before that, I hadn't really run much, and I had a pair of trainers that I was using. And as I started to go a bit further, I would come back, and honestly, my feet were in bits, my knees were hurting, my ankles were hurting, I realised they were not fit for purpose. So I ordered a new pair of trainers. But I remember when they first arrived, I was a bit like, oh, I don't know about these, because they didn't fit the same way. They supported in different places, they were squidgy in different places, they were more, you know, stronger in different places. And I had a few weeks where I was so tempted to go back to the old, which seems ridiculous, because I knew that the old was causing me actual physical damage. But still, there was something comforting about it. And so in the end, I just had to get rid of the old pair of shoes so that I knew whenever I was going to go for a run, I only had one choice. I could only take the new. And of course, it benefited me greatly, and I was able to go further and do it more regularly. And I think that's why Paul talks about putting to death. We can't try and wear these two wardrobes side by side. We have to make a choice that this is not who we are anymore. And so we get rid of the old. And the other thing about the wardrobe is, it also makes me think of a uniform. I work in a hospital, and a lot of people I work with wear a uniform. And the thing about wearing a uniform is when you put it on, it reminds you of what you're coming to do and who you represent. And it's not just for you, it tells everybody around you. And that's why we have uniforms in hospitals, isn't it? That's the physio, that's the radiographer, that's the nurse. You know who they are, you know what they can do. And it's not just for the wearer, it's for everybody else. And when we clothe ourselves with kindness, compassion, humility and patience, yes, we remind ourselves of who we are, but we also tell the world around us who we are and who we represent. Yeah. Yeah. And that's why it's so important. And so, who we are will affect what we choose, and what we choose leads us then to the whatever you do. And there are four things that I picked out of this passage about whatever you do that strike me, in particular with regards to the different groups of people that Paul addresses in this passage. So the first is this: whatever you do has no age limit. Paul addresses fathers and children. This message and this mandate that he's giving is intergenerational, which I think is amazing. I remember when I used to go to youth groups and youth clubs in church, and we're talking probably 2-3 years ago. That wasn't supposed to be that, but the biggest laugh. I remember that, I don't know if it was a thing in the 2000s, but we'd go to these big gatherings and we'd finish, and whoever was at the front would say, "You guys are the church of tomorrow," and everybody would cheer and hoop and holler, and I did as well, I didn't get caught up in the excitement. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, you know what, that was nonsense. We weren't the church of tomorrow. Nobody should have been telling us that we were the church of tomorrow. We were the church of then. God was using us in our schools, in our universities, in our colleges, in our playgrounds. And we need to, as long as we've got God's breath in our lungs, he can be using us. There's no age limit. There's no retirement age at the other end either for what God can do through us. And I think, you know, the Bible is full, isn't it, of young people and children that God used to do incredible things. Josiah, David, Timothy, Mary, to name but a few. And I've really learned a lot from my children. And there was one particular story that really struck me. So Miriam and Gideon are 4 now. And one day we went to pick them up from nursery. And the nursery manager wanted to have a chat with us. And she mentioned that she'd been really distressed when she'd come to work that morning because she very, very sadly had to go to the funeral of a 5-year-old boy who'd been up through the nursery. And she said she'd come back from the funeral and our kids had asked her what was wrong. And she told them. And they'd said to her, "You don't need to worry, Rachel. That little boy's in heaven with Jesus." And she said they started to tell her all about Jesus and all of their friends. And she said it completely lifted her spirit and it changed the energy in the whole room. And you know, I was so blown away because in my adult mind, I'd have been thinking, oh, she's in a position of authority, probably shouldn't go there. Or, you know, she's feeling quite emotionally fragile. And thank God they don't think like an adult. And they just offered what they had and what they knew, and they changed the atmosphere in that place. And I think that's amazing. And that's why we need to share the stories of what God's doing from the youngest to the oldest, because it builds all of us up and it encourages all of us that whatever you do has no age limit. The second thing I notice is whatever you do is regardless of status. Paul goes to great lengths to mention wives and husbands, and slaves and free, and fathers and children, and Greek and Jew, circumcised, uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave or free. All of these different groups. And it is telling all of them that they all have the opportunity to accept their God-given identity. And again, the Amplified Bible says, not just there is no, but there is no distinction between. And I really like that. One of my favourite verses is in Revelation chapter 7 and verse 9, where John describes looking up and there is a great multitude that no one can count from every nation, tribe, people and language standing before the throne and before the Lamb. It's not that it's just a homogenous thing, but it's that the things that we use to divide ourselves sometimes in the physical are not the things that distinguish us in the kingdom. Actually, the way of the kingdom is for all of us. And I really love the fact that Paul addresses all of these people and says, regardless of your status, none of you are disqualified from accepting your God-given identity and from the reassurance that all it is your faith in Jesus, which leads to a wonderful eternity, but also that gives all of us the opportunity to partner in the gospel in the present. The third thing that strikes me in this passage from the whatever you do is that whatever you do is not confined by life circumstances. Paul addresses slaves a couple of times and encourages them to lift up their eyes, that their master is not the person that owns them, but their master is the Lord and they're working for him. And you know, some of these slaves probably never would have known freedom. They never would have seen it this side of eternity. But even they're not disqualified from entering the kingdom. And I think sometimes we sort of say to God, just let me get this sorted first. Let's get through this next stage. I promise, you know, you'll have my full attention after that. But you know, life is always throwing us curveballs, isn't it? And I was thinking about three D's that kind of like weave through the tapestry of life. Distractions, disasters, and devastations. Distractions, I think we all know what they are. They come in many forms. In one sense, I think we've probably never been more distracted than we are now. I don't ever have less than 5 tabs open on my computer or my phone. There's information everywhere. And not all distractions are bad, but they can certainly take us off course from keeping our focus on the work of the kingdom. And I'm sure we all know what distractions look like in our own lives. And then there are the disasters, the bigger things, the things that probably arrest life for a little while, things that we have to think, okay, I need to sort this out. It might be a change in our working circumstances, it might be financial struggles, it might be relationship challenges, all sorts of different things. Again, disasters, hopefully they're not all the time, but often they're never far away, and again, they can just take our eyes off Jesus. And then the last thing is the devastations, and we all know what those look like in our lives. Bereavements and losses, serious ill physical or mental health, the things, the points at life after which you think, actually, my life is never going to be the same again. And I know I've had those, and I know many of you will. I think the problem is that if we're waiting for a life free of distractions, disasters, and devastation, we might be waiting a long time. I think these are all part of the tapestry of life, and I can tell you the last time I was without one of them. But you know, I think the gift in the Christian life, and the gift in life with Christ, is not the absence of those things. It's being able to hold those things in tension and still know that we can glorify God in the midst of every season of our life. Because of what we said at the beginning, because we know that we are raised with Christ, we know that we're hidden with him, we're contained, we're secure, and that he is our life, and he's coming back for us. And so the distractions, the disasters, the devastations, will not last forever. And you know, if we allow it to, I know that God can use even the darkest days to bring about some of the most incredible fruit and the most amazing opportunities in the most unexpected ways. And I say that because I've seen it happen in my own life. But even as I look around this room, I've seen people who in their darkest days have emanated the glory of God. And it's not for anything they've done, it's just Christ in them. So be encouraged. It doesn't matter what the circumstances of life are. We can still be glorifying God as long as we remember who we are and what it is that he's promised us. And the fourth thing I notice is that whatever you do, do it with gratitude. Paul talks about being thankful quite a lot in this passage. And I know that gratitude is quite, you know, it's quite on trend at the moment. You can buy gratitude journals and they've got like quotes from Maya Angelou and Gandhi and them. You see people sitting in circles in parks, holding hands and talking about what they're grateful for. But actually, I think the practice of gratitude is incredibly important in our Christian walk. And there was a period of time where I was very deliberate about practicing being grateful. It was my first year as a doctor, and one of the jobs I worked, I was working with a colleague who really, she was no less than a bully. She made me feel about this small. And it was really hard working with her day in, day out. Sometimes it was just the two of us on the ward for maybe 12 or 13 hours. It was really hideous. I had a Christian friend who worked in another ward, and one day I was having a good old moan to her. And, you know, I thought she would join in and be like, yeah, she's awful, she's rubbish, let's refer her to the GMC. And instead she said, she was like, try and find something to be grateful for at the end of every day. And I was like, oh. That's not the advice I was hoping for. But I thought, okay, I'll give it a go. So I had the journey from our ward back to the car park every day. I said, okay, this is going to be my time to practice gratitude. And honestly, the first time I did it, I was like a petulant child. I was like, well, Lord, I suppose I can thank you that when I finally went downstairs at 4 o'clock for lunch, there was still some food. And then as time went on, I took it more seriously. And you know what? I would get there, I'd get to the car, and I'd still have more to be thankful for. And I'd keep, and it just kept coming out of me. I realised there was so much that I could be grateful for. Do you know what? The situation with my colleague didn't change. It actually got a little bit worse. God didn't smite her as per my original prayers. But something inside of me changed. My heart changed and my focus changed. I realized that yes, this situation was awful and it was true, but it wasn't the whole reality. It was actually just one part. It was just one part of my life. And I took my focus off her and I put my focus back onto him. And it changed the way that I worked. She was only one of my colleagues. I had a whole ward of other colleagues, patients, and relatives and other people that I was interacting with in my daily life. And I was spending so much energy on her that I wasn't thinking about any of that. And I was able to be a much better witness in my workplace when I practiced gratitude and remembered, actually, yeah, there's so much that I can thank God for. And I'm so glad I did that so deliberately in that season, because it got me through. And if ever I get to a time where I'm, you know, struggling a bit or feeling a bit irritable, I'll get back into that habit of finding a time. I've done it with a friend, but we'll leave a voice note at the end of each day on each other's WhatsApp to make sure we're going to do this every day and set my soul back to giving thanks to God. And so in one sense, you know, it really doesn't matter where we live, where we work, if we work, where we worship, where we serve. Because if we know who we are and we're sure of our identity, if we know that we are holy and chosen and dearly loved, and if we walk as though we are, then we will see everything through that lens. Naturally, everything will be as unto God. We'll realize that the distractions, disasters, and devastations of life are not forever. And we'll have our eyes and our hearts open to the many opportunities that there are to honour God in our daily life. I just want to finish with one little story that I hope will make you chuckle as well. But this is 2019, like Denise said, a time that feels a million years ago. And so Simeon was about 4 months old and Miriam and Gideon were two. So things were really calm in our house. And we used to go to, so we still go to a twins play group in Burton, and it's a parent-led group. So it was my week to bring the snacks. So it was supposed to be at the health centre in Burton at 10 o'clock, and it was 9:45, and we were still in our house in Derby, and we hadn't got the snacks. So I was absolutely seething. I was like, oh, goodness sake. It was one of those mornings where everything had gone wrong. The kids didn't want to wear what I put them in. And, you know, everybody was just crying. One of those mornings where everybody's crying. I bundled them in the car and I was like, guys, we're so late. I really don't like, you know, when I've said I'm going to do something, I want to see that through. And I hated the fact that we weren't going to be there at 10 o'clock and it was completely beyond my control. But we drove to the corner shop and I left them in the car. I was like, right, I'm going to go in and get the snacks. And I went, and honestly, you probably could have seen smoke coming out of my ears. I was so annoyed. And I'm there getting my fruit. I was heading for the breadsticks, making a beeline for the breadsticks. And I walked past an aisle where a woman in her 80s was collapsed on the floor, just walked straight past. And then, because I was on a mission to get the breadsticks, because it was the most important thing, and then this little voice in my head said, Phoebe, you're a doctor, don't you think you should see if she's okay? And I thought, oh my goodness, you know, I got so distracted by the breadsticks, these giant breadsticks. And also, I think another part of it was I was on maternity leave, so I hadn't been putting on the uniform of work for a long time. I wasn't in that mindset. I'd kind of forgotten about all of that. So eventually I came to my senses and I went and I kind of just stood in the aisle for a while and they said, can we help you? And I was like, oh, sorry, no, I'm a doctor. I thought I might be able to help. Everybody sprung into action and, you know, sort of sorted her out, stabilised her and got a little bit of information so that we could hand over when the paramedics arrived. And I walked out of the store with my precious breadsticks and everything else. I thought the staff might give it to me for free after that. Still had to pay maybe next time. And the woman was absolutely fine, by the way. I saw her a few weeks later in the same corner shop and she was absolutely fine, so that was lovely. But you know, I just went and I sat in the car and I thought, unbelievable. I can't believe I was so focused on just nonsense that I almost missed an opportunity to help somebody. I just walked past this woman who was collapsed. And you know, straight, quick as a flash after that, the thought came into my head, how many times have I walked past somebody who is spiritually collapsed because I'm so focused on this tiny aspect of life that I'm missing those opportunities? Yeah. I just thought, oh Lord, may I never miss an opportunity like that again, even in a very practical sense, to be the hands and feet of Jesus, because I'm so focused on myself and my own circumstances. Because for me, the great joy and the adventure and the buzz that we get in the Christian walk is in those moments, isn't it? It's in having those encounters with people and finding out what their needs are and knowing that Jesus is the answer, just like my children did in nursery. That's what makes me excited to be a Christian, is knowing that I carry the Holy Spirit with me. And when I'm open to it, those opportunities are there. And there's no buzz like it, really. I don't think there is. And that really is the joy of partnering in the gospel. So my prayer for all of us is that, safe in the knowledge of who we are, secure in our identity in Christ, that we would all, with ever-increasing glory, find ourselves able to honour God and find every opportunity to serve him in whatever we do. Amen.